Tour Junkies.
What's going on, golf addicts? Thanks for downloading the Tour Junkies Golf Podcast. This week, we are going to break down the Wells Fargo Championship from a brand new venue, Eagle Point Golf Club in Wilmington, North Carolina. And our resident North Carolina golf expert, Mr. Paul Tesori, caddies for Webb Simpson on the PGA Tour and is a member at Eagle Point, played Eagle Point frequently. Paul actually played it just a week ago. So we're going to get a great breakdown from Paul here in the first few minutes of the show. Then we're going to recap the crazy weekend at the Zurich, the Kiz and Scott Brown and Cam Smith and Jonas Blixt showdown, Dottie Pepper's catastrophe, the Golf Channel's catastrophe on Sunday as far as coverage, and we're just going to rant for a little bit. And then we're going to give you our picks and one and done for the Wells Fargo. Thanks again, as always, for downloading, not streaming, the Tour Junkies podcast. We greatly appreciate it. And may your screens be green. Enjoy the interview with Paul Tesori up first, followed by me and Pat. Thanks again.
What's up, Tour Junkies followers and PJ Nation? We have got a repeat visitor on the Tour Junkies podcast. Probably holds the record, I think, slight edge over Baldo for most Tour Junkies podcast appearances. That is our favorite caddy on tour, Mr. Paul Tesori, carrying the bag for Webb Simpson. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's good to know I'm leading at something. I think it's been a long time since I've led, so I will take that and run with it. Thanks for having me on.
There you go. Yeah, man. Good to have you as always. So it's Wells Fargo Championship Week, and this week's unique as it's not at Webb's home course of Quail Hollow, as you guys are, Quail Hollow's preparing to host PGA Championship, but we do have Eagle Point Golf Club there in Wilmington, North Carolina, and it's
I do know a lot about it, thank goodness. So every year Webb invites him and nine others to go on a, we call it the men's trip, whatever you want to call it, men's trip, boys trip. We go and we play 27 a day on the big course generally, and nine, they have a great par three course there, nine, and that's where we go and we do it every year. It's probably 5 or 6 days of nothing but golf, Bible study basically is what we do, but golf takes the main in the clubhouse, so to say. This year was old versus young, and we battled it out just last week, so very new and fresh on the mind. That's for sure.
Nice.
It's a golf course that the players are going to rave about. I believe the viewers will as well. They brought in the Augusta agronomist about 4 to 6 months ago and brought him in to see what he thought and where could they make improvements. He didn't change the golf course. He just changed the aesthetics of the golf course. Just kind of the outline. And coming in this year was such a drastic change from last year. You come in and it almost feels like they have implanted Augusta and just brought it to the beach and put it right by some beautiful scenery. It's a place that a lot of guys aren't going to want to leave, that's for sure.
You know, I've seen a lot of comment from players and some other folks that it's very much like Augusta National. So talk a little bit about that. Are there any other corollary courses besides the National? And, you know, typically we look at bombers at the National because, it is a little bit longer course, but it's, you know, not very penal as far as the rough and things like that. So talk about just sort of the type player that this course will fit the best.
Well, I think the good thing for you and the viewers is you really just have to look at past Wells Fargo results. This course is going to mirror a lot of what we saw with Quail Hollow. And that is obviously before the changes that we will see this year at the PGA Championship for Quail Hollow. But, 4 par 5s, which Quail Hollow had and Eagle Point has as well. It's just kind of funny. The two other courses I view as being very similar both have 4 par 5s, which is a rarity this day and age on the PGA Tour, and that would be Augusta and Quail. I think it's got a little bit of a Riviera feel as well, in a different way, not like you're going to see it up and see the similarities, but in what I think players have to do well to succeed. I think it'll be a ball striker's golf course. The greens are, they're 2 to 3 tiered, very quick, a lot of undulation. So distance control is going to be a big deal. Driving it the fairway, even though we don't have a main set a rough. The rough, I believe, don't trust me on this, it'll be a little less than 3 inches. So I didn't have any problem reaching the greens out of any of the rough. So these guys won't either. But the runoffs around the greens are quite penal. Par five or par three fifth hole, you can, you know, knock a ball 8 yards onto the green, and if it's on the left side, it can go into the water. We gave our field to Tim Huffman, the tournament director, and to Bobby, and to the tour already. Guys, try to grow the rough up just a little bit on those holes. You don't want to see guys hitting good golf shots on the green and have them feeding back into the water. We don't mind, you know, like 12 at Augusta, if a ball misses the green to go back in the water, that's fine. But you don't want balls being 4, 5, 6, 7 yards onto the green and feeding back in the water. So hopefully they listened on that hole and they made some adjustments there. So distance control will be a big thing, driving in the fairway a big thing. I think you'll see a lot of your same guys pop up. You know, you look at a course like Augusta, and people think it's always the putters that went out there and go through. Yes, good putters have won there, but also Vijay Singh, you know, Louis has won there. Or has Louis won? No, Louis hasn't. He's almost, but Charles Fortzel, Danny Willett, guys that Cabrera, guys have won at Augusta not being great putters. And I think Cabrera wanted a playoff over Kenny Barry and Chad Campbell, again, both not known to be great putters. So I think looking through it, it's going to be your guys that are going to be really in control of their iron play and obviously good drivers of the ball.
So, you know, you kind of started mentioning a few players. I'll put you on the spot real quick. You know, give me a couple just, you know, quick names that come up. Maybe some under-the-radar guys you've seen playing well lately that you think might play well.
This will be... Yeah, you got this. Will be the first time I picked my guy in a long time. I don't play favorites on your show, if you can remember. But I really think Webb is primed to have a great week. He was one back going in the last round at Hilton Head, and was only two back with four to play at Hilton Head. Had a great chance to win. A couple late three putts derailed him, but it's a course that he knows better than anyone else is going to tee it up there. He's a member there as well. He probably plays per year a dozen rounds, and obviously just having the guys trip there, and he got there on Saturday, so he's already played a couple of rounds without anybody being there. He knows the course better than anyone else. The course fits him. Typically, ball striking, tee to green, strokes gained is his best category, so I don't think that'll change this week. So he's been under the radar for a while, still struggling with consistency, but I think it'll be a good week for him. You know, I tend to mention this guy every year that we talk about Quail. I think I've done Quail with you guys one other time, but Lucas Glover, another great golf course for him. He always drives the golf ball well, consistent ball striker, a guy that controls distance well. And, you know, I don't know the field too well, but his, again, not just because he just lost in a playoff this week, but been playing well. He played with us in the next to last group at Hilton Head. He started to show that form that he showed 2 years ago when he was battling in all those playoffs. Again, a very consistent ball striker and driver of the ball. Really good with controlling his distance control. So those would be a couple of guys just offhand that pop out. I wish I knew the field better. Obviously, Dustin's back. He's been off for, what, almost a month now. So he's always a threat. What has he won, 3 in a row? You can't take that away from him yet. So he's not really under the radar, though, so I don't think I'm allowed to use that pick.
Nah.
Going into this week.
Well, Pat coming out swinging here, like two questions in, already asking you to make predictions and make picks. I mean, Pat, you got to dip your toe in the water a little bit with Paul here.
Pat,
all right, I want to ask.
You're allowed to do it, buddy.
Maybe a more fun question. Who else was on the guys' trip? Anybody else that we would know or be interested in?
Well, so those that know the gospel quite well, we had a couple of prominent pastors that go every year, C.J. Mahaney being one of them. That's always a big pull. And Raleigh guys, a couple Savannah guys. Well, it's always been pastors versus pagans. Anyone that knows me knows I've always been in the pagan group.
You're on the pagan side, yeah.
No one has ever mistaken me for a pastor. However, this year, Weber wanted to change it up and go old versus young. I definitely fell in the old category. So it was.
Yeah, what was the cutoff for that, by the way?
33 was the youngest young guy, and CJ was the oldest old guy. I don't even know how old CJ is. I'd say he's probably mid-50s, so he took the cake there. But it was by far the most, like, highly contested one. It was really tight. Singles, we were two up, and we went into alternate shot, 5-on-5, straight alternate on the big course. Day one to push to a par 3 course playoff, and Weber drained a 16-footer to win one up on the par 3. So it was highly contested, that's for sure. It got very quiet the last little bit there.
Yeah.
Grinded it. And we did not want them to win. So I think we're going to stay with old versus young, at least for the foreseeable future. So a lot of fun. Webb's favorite week of the year. And just a lot of fun. We take the boat out every night, take the boat to the golf course. Today, the guys pick us up in golf carts, and you can't
beat it.
Don't feel
that
too
bad. That sounds like
for
a dream. Well, if you need first and second alternates next year, I'll be on the young team. Pat is definitely the old guy on the Tour Junkie side. You just let us know if anybody slips down the stairs and hurts their back.
Unless the Lord calls any of us home, I don't think anyone's going home. I was highly medicated this year just to be able to play.
Because
I don't want to miss it. So that'll tell you a lot.
Well, good to hear Webb sinking putts. That's another good reason to keep an eye out for Weber. We know if he can get that flat stick rolling, it's probably lights out for the field. So you mentioned that Weber is a member there. I know Carl Peterson's a member there, holds the course record apparently. Anybody else? Any other local guys you think with some ties to the area?
Well, the only other guy I would know that's probably spent some time there would be Johnson Wagner. You brought up Carl, which, you know, I forgot about Carl for a second, but he just came off of a great event up in San Antonio. So, maybe he's ready to start a little run. He's always been a guy that maybe hasn't played consistent throughout his career, but when he gets going, he's not afraid to play well. So he might be a guy to look at. He does know the course well. He's got a house there that he rents out close by, and he just played there a few rounds last month. So, again, he would be a guy, an under-the-radar guy, a guy you normally probably wouldn't pick. But I don't know if he played the team event, but I know he played well at San Antonio, so it might be a sneaky pick. And, you know, Johnson obviously is a guy that a little bit streaky as well, a lot like Carl, but does know the golf course quite well as well. So I don't know if Grayson Murray has popped up there to see the course. You know, people have asked me, I really think Kim Huff and the tournament director should throw me like a little good parking spot, because I've talked quite a few players in the plane that have called me to ask about it. And I don't think Tony Finau ended up playing, but his caddy called me and said, what do you think about the course? And I was like, buddy, it's really made for him. But I got to be honest with you, it's a course made for all of them. I love golf courses like that. It's a lot like PTC, where length always helps. The four par fives, Weber will only be able to get to one of them, possibly two, depending on where the wind will be on number 12. But where the bigger guys can get home on three of them, there's one that's about 6:30. I don't believe anybody
can
get home unless we get, you know, if we get it 10 to 15 downwind and it stays firm, the bigger guys can still get home, but it'll be two huge folks. So I still think it's going to be Zach was a guy that didn't want to play and called or texted Weber and I on a group text and said, what do you think? We both said, absolutely. You still have to control your distance control. We're still going to hit wedges into at least 9 holes, being Weber. And, you know, Zach's about our same length as far as this goes. So wedge play is still going to be big. It'll be a lot of fun, and the guys are not going to want to leave. It's going to be highly, highly reviewed by everybody, and will definitely be a talk of going back.
When you say Zach, you mean Zach Johnson?
Yes.
And you mentioned the wind. I was kind of reading a little bit about it. It's only like a mile from the ocean. So how, you know, a few holes, it does seem wind can play a factor and be in your face if the prevailing wind is up. I mean, do you think that wind is something that's worth really looking at as far as like sharp wind players?
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. I actually haven't gone. I always look at rain when I leave. So last night when I was finishing up packing, I just looked at rain. I didn't really look at wind, but yeah, if the winds are up, which again, generally just because we've played there so often in the morning, you'll kind of get that little light 5 to 10, but in the afternoon, you'll kind of get that 10 to 15 with gust of 20 type of thing. And again, those guys I mentioned all seem to be really good wind players. Weber, Lucas, who else did I throw in there for Quail? His guys that really strike the ball well. It's going to be a second shot golf course, and the par threes, are going to be exactly that. You got to put it on the right tier. You got to control your distance. So it's going to be guys that are known as being quite consistent ball strikers. When I first went around the course, I thought it would be a little different, more of the pitchers of the ball. But seeing how fast the greens are already and the winds are going to be up and the greens are firm right now, I'm really going to be on the side. It's going to be your consistently solid, strong ball strikers that are going to come out on top.
So you mentioned, you kind of touched on it real quick, Paul, but just about the weather. You know, looking at it, it looks like we're going to get quite a bit of rain possibly on Thursday and Friday, and then maybe even Tuesday or so. Is that going to change the course much, or do you think it'll stay fairly consistent, especially on the greens? Do you think they'll still roll just as quick, even if we get a good amount of rain?
That would change it dramatically, and would actually change some of my answers, to be honest with you. You know, if the rain does stay up, this is interesting. I looked yesterday morning, and the highest chance is 20%. So it'll make you and the viewers laugh. Hold off on your picks as late as possible, because for the guys' trip, it looked terrible on Monday, and then the next day it would look terrible on Wednesday, and the next day it'd be terrible on Friday. And by the time we left, the weather was incredible. We didn't get rained out any of the days. It ended up being amazing. It looked like two washouts when we left. So keep an eye on that forecast. Yeah, if it ends up downpouring, if it looks like we get two big days, the field will widen, in my opinion. It'll just become a little broader in who can win and who can win, because shots into the green will become a little less important. Anytime a course gets soft, these guys are so talented that anytime a course gets soft, it just kind of brings the field closer together, whereas when a course is firm, it separates the field a little bit more.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking now. It looks like it's actually pretty decent Thursday and Friday, Pat. I don't know. Pat's normally our resident weather expert, but
I think, again, you look at the coast like that, it's just like it is here in Savannah. You know, you never know what's going to pop up, but it is showing an 80% chance on, I believe it was Thursday with some storms, and then 40% on Friday. But again, that could change. So I think you're right. This is one of those weeks where you need to hold off until Wednesday.
Yeah, I agree. And again, it's a week if your viewers have these guys they haven't picked, and I know you guys look a lot deeper into this than I do. I'm usually just focused on Team Simpson. But, you know, if a guy like Webb hasn't been as attractive, obviously, the last couple of years with his putting, or, again, a guy like Carl who hasn't popped up and you're looking for a week to maybe use somebody like that, he's a guy that makes a lot of birdies. He's not afraid. He knows the golf course well. And again, if it stays firm, it's going to be guys that know the course well. So he just did that really good out in San Antonio where the course was firm and windy and played fantastic. Oh, I just thought of somebody. Actually thinking about that, Martin Laird. I believe Martin got six top tens maybe already this year. And he's a guy, again, that doesn't pop up that often. Martin lives in Charlotte. I'm sure he's taken a few trips over there to see the golf course. A great ball striker, a guy that even though you wouldn't think plays well and wins, hits a lot of different types of golf shots. So he's proven lately that the consistency is returning and maybe he's ready to do some damage as well.
Yeah, I'm always a sucker for a little party Marty Laird, actually.
there you go.
I like that, man. You're just getting divine inspiration as you continue talking to us. You're going to hit the winner, out of this group, I believe. And hopefully it's Webb Simpson, since you called that one.
My favorite pick still was Augusta. I picked Sergio on Tuesday, picked him in a pool that we had, and picked the winning score.
What?
Guy's first major and winning score. And I've got, I have four witnesses to the crime because I won money off all four of them. So that was my claim. I called Sergio at 11-under to win his first major. I probably should retire off of that one.
Well, too bad it wasn't on the podcast. Then it could have been recorded and etched on iTunes and in history forever. But
it's okay. It's in my mind for history. That's
yeah.
So, my pick this week. I'm going to go with Weber. I'm going to stick with that same magic number at 11-under.
Love it. Well, hey, I know you're in the car. Can I ask you a couple of quick ones? And you just say, just give me either an answer or you say pass. Okay? I'm going to let you say pass.
Because
I'm always up for making you look good. Okay. Did you see the Dottie Pepper interview yesterday?
I did not.
Okay. Then we'll skip that one. Thoughts on the, have you heard anything since we've last talked to you about the daily fantasy world on the PGA Tour? You've had, since we've talked to you last, Will Wilcox has signed his affiliate deal. It's not really an endorsement deal, but an affiliate deal. Have you heard anything about that lately, or any more talk you've heard on tour about fantasy golf and its potential impact on tour?
You know what? I wish I could sit here and float something beautiful out there, but I really haven't.
Okay.
You know, the guys, again, it's weird. I think it's going to be something as the younger guys continue to push up. It's going to become more and more important. Weber is still in the winners category right now, and we typically get the same kind of guys that we play with each week. And, you know, it's definitely not the younger guys. I definitely think in the next probably year to 2 years, especially with how good these young guys are all playing, I'll probably hear more and more of it. Right now, it's still the guy that wants Webb to keep his head up because he picked him in the fantasy golf this week, which is usually annoying.
Very annoying, yeah.
At the time, keep your head up. Yeah, you know, buddy, we're trying harder than you probably could ever imagine.
Yeah.
That being said, I think it's something that's still pushing forward. But as far as we're concerned, yeah, still not hearing a lot of it from the players.
Yeah. All right, well, you know, just if you ever hear knuckleheads like that say that stuff, just tell them to shut up.
You know, like, I'm gonna tell them just to listen to the podcast. That's what.
Yeah, tell them to listen to us. We do not endorse that garbage. We do not endorse it.
I love it.
It is a bad look for everybody, and you guys are clearly playing for, you know, your career, your livelihood, your families, a lot more than a $3 buy-in on a contest is really stupid.
Well, I tell you this much, I love the question. You guys study stats, and that is something that, you know, we do at the end of the year a lot of times, and statisticians on the PGA Tour are becoming statisticians. Struggle there a little. University of Florida education coming through there. they're becoming really important on the PGA Tour, like more and more guys. I would probably have to venture to say, of the top 150 guys, I bet a fourth use some type of person that goes through the stats to help them. So it's becoming more and more important, and that's what you and your listeners are all doing a great job of. So it's important, that's for sure.
Interesting. Well, yeah, along those lines, it sounds like I'm sure you'll hear about the Dottie Pepper situation, but she could have used a little stat help yesterday in interviewing Scott Brown and basically asking him how it felt to finally be in contention for the first time ever on the PGA Tour, knowing that his partner, and then said, you know, your partner Kiz has been here and been in this position before. You haven't. How do you feel? And Scott very gracefully. He handled it extremely well with class, like us good old Southern, you know, boys would do, and basically said, you know, yeah, I feel all right. You know, I feel fine. I've actually won a PGA Tour event. I won Puerto Rico in 2013. So it's been okay. And then she continued to stick her leg in her mouth and mention that was not a full field event. Which it was. And she has been
a full field event either.
Oh, she's been absolutely hammered on Twitter and is now deleted her account, right, Pat? Yeah,
no.
That's the last thing.
And guys, can I tell you something? That woman,
yeah,
probably the most misunderstood. She is a sweetheart. She really is. She is so kind and gracious, like out there with us, inside the ropes, following us, like, that's too bad. Obviously, yes, she didn't quite do her homework there and got in a little bit of trouble. And, you know, Scott, you know, Tiger's last top 10, he was in the next to last group. Scott was playing with him and, you know, made the hole in one on three at Greensboro. And so obviously that would have been a pretty big opportunity too in the next to last group. But I'm sorry to hear that. She's actually a really good lady and does a good job, but obviously made a mistake there. And in this world of social media, you, in that kind of format,
you
get hammered pretty good.
Yep. All right, man. Well, we appreciate your time, Paul, and best of luck this week with you and Webb, and we'll be looking for great things. And thanks as always for giving us some great information, and we appreciate it, man. And best of luck to you,
boys. I always enjoy being on the telecast with you. And the next time you'll probably even have a chance to see me. I'll be Quail. But if you need anything for the PGA, I'll be more than willing to talk to you guys. I love talking to you. The podcast, I know, is doing great. Should be. Thanks, and root us on this week, maybe.
What is going on, Golf Addicts, David and Pat? Once again, the Tour Junkies podcast. You guys just heard an incredible interview with our buddy Paul Tesori. Really grateful for Paul coming on the show once again. We thought none better than to give us a little insight into a track that the PGA Tour has not seen before in Eagle Point. But before we get into the Wells Fargo Championship, what an eventful week, Pat. Just a lot going on. It was a busy Sunday. Of course, we had a very dramatic Monday finish with Kiz and Brown losing in the fourth playoff hole to Jonas Blixt and Cameron Smith, as if there were not enough reasons for me to hate Jonas freaking Blixt.
You got another one, didn't you?
My Lord. If you guys have not followed the Tour Junkies podcast since probably late 2015, right when we first started, maybe early 2016, you may not know that I have a deep hatred for Jonas Blixt. I played him, you know what, actually, Pat, it must have been the Players' Championship in 2016. That's when my hatred started, I believe.
No, it was
before that. It had to have been before
that.
Yeah,
it was actually while we were kind of in TJ test mode.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's just such a hack. He's so inconsistent. He burned me really bad one year that I had a lot of him. And that's the beauty of fantasy golf, right? I think I've said this before. The great thing about fantasy golf is golf is so unpredictable and variable that you don't have to play, you know, the greatest players in the world if you don't want to. You can still get away with it because it's just that variable. It's not like football. Like, you got to play Antonio Brown in football, or you're just going to lose. You know, whereas golf, there's 140-something guys in the field every week. If you just hate a guy, you can get away with not playing him. And that's how I am with Jonas Blixt. I just don't play the guy. And then to see our pod bros and friends of the Tour Junkies podcast, Scott Brown and Kevin Kisner, get that far and then lose to Jonas Blixt. It just pissed me off to no end. Pat, we got to talk about Sunday, too. The chip-in.
Yes. It was incredible. You know, it was funny, though, too, because I just thought that, I don't know, I just had a feeling before Kiz was chipping that something magical was going to happen. And that, to me, I'm going to say that was probably the shot of the year so far. Just under the circumstances, 18th hole, has to make an eagle to even, because, you know, I mean, Cam Smith was up there close, so we knew he was going to make a birdie, so they right. had to make that. So just absolutely incredible. And the funny thing was, I actually texted Kiz later that night, and I was like, man, I swear to God, I'm covered in wine because I screamed so loud when you made that that my wife basically threw her wine at me. And because it kind of ticked her off because she didn't know where I was. I had my headphones in. I was watching it on my iPad. And that's a whole nother story. I was watching on my iPad mainly because of Golf Channel and how they were screwing things up with their on the main network. So I just went straight to my iPad and just cut off all texts and everything else. I just didn't want to see anything. And I just was watching it on my iPad because I knew I was strictly going to get, you know, Zurich coverage. But I screamed so loud that it kind of ticked my wife off. But again, it was just a fantastic shot. It was just sort of an injustice that they didn't win. But
it really was.
I will say this. Cam Smith, if you don't know this guy, the guy is a player. And he showed that in that playoff. I mean, just yeah. was solid as a rock. And Blix hit some good shots, but he couldn't make any putts.
Blix hit a good shot on the par 3, missed the putt. Cam Smith carried them the whole time.
He did.
Easily.
He did.
He made some great chip shots.
Yeah.
Great wedge shots. Cam carried them. We've been on Cam for months, as a lot of people in the DFS world have. And, you know, there's probably a lot of people that got their first exposure to Cam Smith on Sunday and Monday, and that's because the Golf Channel only shows a handful of people every week. It was just really painful to see Kiz and Brown not win that thing. You just felt like, well, Paul kind of mentioned it. He said you felt like it was not good for them when the rain delay came on Sunday. They were just so hot on Sunday when the rain delay hit. But then they came out hot again. I mean, they birdied their first two holes right after the rain delay to keep the streak going. and you know, you just kind of felt like it was coming, and then they just cooled down and kind of coughed it up there at the end. But then Chips, you know, Kiz makes the chip, and I'm just like, there's no way they can't lose this thing. Like, it's just not, it's not destiny that they lose this. And then Monday finish, oh, it was so brutal. And the only bet I made all week on that event was on Kiz and Brown. Oh, and I was gonna hedge, but I was like, nah, it's not. You don't hedge on. You just let it ride. When it's your boy Kiz and Brown, you just let it ride. Whatever. Yeah. I wouldn't change anything.
You would change Golf Channel coverage of it.
I was just about to say, but you brought up the Golf Channel coverage, which freaking pissed me off. Like, I was to the point Sunday afternoon, I was lashing out at my children without cause. I was so freaking pissed, and it started.
Wait. You need cause to lash out at your children? Really? I just do it. I got good kids. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, just, you know, they're looking at me like wondering what's wrong with me. But like, I just cannot. When Kiz was on 13 and he had a putt for birdie, and they had it split screened with the freaking LPGA event, they had it split screened. It was like the first hole of the playoff. Kiz and them were on 13, and as he strikes the putt, it's like a 13 footer. We're not talking about like a 60 foot birdie putt. As he strikes the putt on 13, they stop the split screen and full screen the LPGA event. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna say bad words if this doesn't fix itself. So I like get on Twitter and I rant for a second. I tag the Golf Channel. I'm like, please, if you're going to make us watch the women's event that is taking for freaking ever, then leave it split screen. Just leave it split screen. Don't touch it. And I even heard today, I think you said, they were all proud of themselves for the split screen thing because they'd never done that before. Well, congratulations. It's 2017. I mean, picture in a picture was a thing like 15 years ago. I remember teaching my dad how to do picture in a picture.
Yeah.
So like nobody really, I mean, congratulations for catching up, but leave the split screen when it is a men's event that has never happened before, a team event at the Zurich, and I don't, you cannot, you need to be committed if you tell me that LPGA event was more exciting or even as exciting than the last six holes of the Zurich. You just need to be committed. I don't know what's wrong with you. I don't care. But to watch Christy Kerr freaking take forever between every shot and then play the same hole, the 18th hole par 5 in every hole of the playoff is asinine.
That was another thing. Playing the same hole. It's just ridiculous.
And my blood is boiling talking about this.
I want to know from Golf Channel like what the thinking was. Like why
No one is thinking. No one is thinking.
I was just with you. I mean, again, literally, and it wasn't like with Kiz, like he was in the backswing of that putting stroke. Like he putted the ball and it was halfway to the hole and they cut to the full screen. God. I mean, I'm sitting there thinking, this is the most ridiculous. Who's ever producing here has no clue whatsoever. Their audience or whatever else. Look, I'm fine with watching the end of the LPGA and the playoff because there's people that are invested in that as well. I mean, they've watched that. You know, if they're showing that on Golf Channel and that's the thing that they're doing, there was a rain delay in the Zurich Classic, so it kind of messed up the schedule in general anyway. But don't just switch to the full screen and then you got to see Christy Kerr taking forever deciding what she's going to do. I don't care if the conditions were tough. I don't care.
That drop that she had on, I don't know what playoff hole it was, second or third time they played that hole, that drop she had behind the green where she's moving cords, the Zurich Classic is lit. Kiz and them are on 15 or something. And they showed us for 5 minutes, not split screen, full screen. They showed for 5 minutes Christy Kerr taking what is probably the most textbook freaking drop on the planet from her ball next to the grandstands, moving camera cords, asking TV guy, media guys to move over. We saw the whole Broadway production for 5 minutes while they did not show a single golf shot at the Zurich Classic. It is, again, I said this the other week about Duffner, it's criminal. It is criminal. That is not the way to grow the freaking game.
It's not at all. And was this, I mean, did I miss something? I mean, was this a major for the LPGA? Or I mean, like,
no.
Or
the other thing was, what a ridiculous hole was 18. The fairway sloped like 70 degrees to the right.
Yeah,
it was literally impossible to put the ball in the fairway. So not only are we watching them play the same hole, but we're watching them play it the exact same way every time. Yeah. Was Christy Kerr not in the right hand rough in between those same three trees all six times they played that hole?
Now that being said. It was the same for the Zurich Classic. Now, let's be fair, on the 18th hole, because we watched that hole, what, three times today for the playoff? And it was true. They were playing that hole the exact same way. Like, I wish they had maybe brought the tees up for the playoff.
Yeah, that would have been nice. Yeah.
So that they could maybe, like, have an option to go for it, because it was basically like, okay, we're going to drive it to the fairway, we're going to lay up to 125 yards out, and we're just going to see who's going to win the wedge game into the... So there was a little bit of that playoff that I thought was... just kind of boring, yeah. But
which
it was it to, is what it is. I mean, they had to play that hole like they probably played it all week, but it was by the way, I gotta mention this. If you're hearing some noise in the background, we are going through some ridiculous storms here, so it's gonna show up on the podcast. I know you get mad with the sound quality sometimes, DB, but I can't help the storms.
No, you know, the last rant for the evening before we move on is the Dottie Pepper catastrophe, which was the interview with Scott Brown's and Kiz on Sunday after Kiz chips in. And if you missed it, you're clearly not on Twitter, which we tell you need to be on Twitter and follow us at @tour_junkies. But Dottie Pepper on Sunday night interviewing Scott and Kiz, looking at Scott and saying, how is this for you? How are you feeling? You know, this is your first time in contention, having not won on the PGA Tour before. When your partner here has been in this position before in Kisner, how are you feeling right now? And Brown gracefully handles the answer by, you know, saying he feels all right, blah, blah, blah. By the way, I did win on the PGA Tour before at the Puerto Rico in 2013, which she handled gracefully. Then she proceeds to continue to stick her foot down her mouth and call it something other than a full field event, which it is a full field event. It's an alternate event, typically.
Whoa.
But it isn't.
Wait a second.
Yes. Yes.
I didn't see that. I just saw a kind of a tweet.
Yeah.
Wait, so she continued on to, like, basically still?
Yeah. She did.
Wow.
She got hammered on social media. I don't know how any other way she got hammered, but she got hammered. Now, Scott handled her very nicely, like a professional, like a good guy, which he is. Kiz looked like he looked like the commercials, like "Want to Get Away," and
his face,
whatever those commercials,
like the
are,
whole thing, like you look at it. At first, he's got this like surprised look on his face. Then he's got kind of
around.
Like this.
He's
awful.
Like, oh, somebody call my name. I think somebody needs me over here.
Yeah, then he looks away. That was great.
And so she just gets roasted on Twitter, including by us. I mean, it was pretty bad. And to me, this is what happens when you have out of touch former golfers who don't follow the tour, other than the 10 or 15, 20 people that, you know, that the networks really promote. She has no idea about Scott Brown. No clue. You know, just it's maddening. Like, get people out there who actually know the players well enough and understand what's going on. Like, I know Dottie Pepper is probably a very nice lady. As Paul said, she's she's obviously played golf at a high level. She understands what it means like to be in the ropes, and she's been in their position. But that's not what you need in that position once you're done playing golf. Like, you just need. You need somebody who can be a professional, but also know who the crap they're talking to. It was unreal.
I think they kind of see the value in a lot of what she does out there. I think they put her in the wrong role when it comes to the post-round interviews and stuff like that, because I just don't think that's where she's comfortable. And I will say this, a positive note for her. One of the things that I noticed when they usually have her in a great position when they're, you know, she's following one of the top groups, like in this case with Kiz and Brownie and Blix and Cam Smith, where as soon as they hit the ball in the playoff, I don't know if you noticed, but she would give you a good, you know, kind of picture into where that ball was going without you being able to actually see, because, you know, as soon as they hit, she'd say, okay, well, that's on a good line. I like hearing stuff like that. I think that's great. I mean, I want to know, hey, that's on a good line, or that's, he's pushed it out to the right or something like that. But don't, you know, maybe just go a little bit of a different route when it comes to the interviews, you know, let her do the golf and let somebody else do the other stuff. But yeah.
Well, she got roasted. She's actually shut down her Twitter account right now. She's gotten hammered so hard just for doing that. So interesting. We'll see what happens with Miss Dottie Pepper if she reactivates here after some of this stuff blows over a little bit. But
to me, it's not, you know, she made the mistake of maybe not, you know, remembering that Brown's been in contention, but then to further go on and then say, well, it's not a full field event or whatever. Like that's where I think you really screwed up. Not even, I mean, the first initial comment's bad enough, but then to just, you know, continue with that.
And then I saw a reply that she gave to somebody early on before she shut down her Twitter account. It was screenshot. She gave a reply later that was not very apologetic either. It was like I made a mistake. I'm a human. That was it kind of thing. Like, it still wasn't, man, you know what? As a player, I know what it feels like to, you know, to kind of not get the respect you're due when you work so hard to succeed in this game, and you get interviewed on live TV, and you're compared to your partner, who, by the way, they share the same number of PGA Tour wins. I mean, Kiz and Scott Brown both have only won once.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, your partner here has been in this position and you haven't. Like, okay, lady, get your facts right. You're in journalism now, right? Like, big time journalism.
Well, again, I love Kiz, but it's, you know, he won at the Sea Island tournament, and it's not like that.
Right. It's not exactly the Players Championship or whatever.
So I mean, again, he's, you know, I'm not hating on him, but it's not like that was a.
But Brownie's had a pretty solid career. Like, he's made plenty of money on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was. I tell you what, though, that coverage Sunday was sending me to another level. I was so hot after that coverage.
I don't know if I've ever seen you like that in coverage.
I was furious. Tweet of the week. We're going to go ahead and give it to ourselves. If you guys caught the Zurich Classic prom pick series that we did, we released some killer photos on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. If you guys did not catch that, you need to go back and catch that. And for all of you who did and you retweeted and shared that with everybody, we really appreciate it. We think it took off pretty well. And thanks for the love. All of our players were pretty good sports too. We got some feedback from some of the players, and they thought it was funny, despite some of them being the female in the picture. It was great stuff. We had a good time with it. Thanks for that. We got to give it to ourselves on that one. We worked really hard for that. We appreciate everybody giving us the love there. Quick iTunes contest update, Pat. You know, two shows ago, I asked for 100 iTunes reviews, and once we get to the 100, I would pick the person who we'd pick somebody, and we'd give them their choice of a hat, a t-shirt, a polo, and some wall markers, stuff like that. And we are literally less than 10 away from having that 100. So
are we really? Wow.
Yeah, we're less than 10, which is fantastic. We appreciate you guys who've left iTunes reviews. We do read them. They are important to us. So we're willing to cough up some of our merchandise, which is just, you know, it's like money, okay? Like, we actually pay money for the merch. So we're giving you money to leave us an iTunes review, which takes about 3 to 4 minutes, and it's free. So please leave us an iTunes review in the iTunes store. We would greatly appreciate it. While we're on the topic of merch, and Pat, we didn't talk about this ahead of time. While we're on the topic of merch, I'm going to throw this out there. If you are in Europe and you listen to our show, which we know that there are some listeners over there, overseas in Europe, we appreciate you guys supporting us, and listening to our redneck accents. We have, you know, our boy Ash Morrison, who we need to give some props to. Ash writes our One Groove Low column on European Tour DFS every week, which, by the way, there's not one this week as they're playing a team event. But Ash Morrison's just been doing really good with his picks, had some great picks. In fact, I cashed in every cash contest that I entered last week on Euro DFS. I cashed because of his picks. I picked 12 of his guys, only one missed the cut. I think he had a couple others miss the cut, but overall he had a great week. He's just been on fire lately, but he's over there in England and is a Tour Junkies guy. He's obviously writing great columns for us for One Groove Low. And we're considering getting some merch in his hands to be able to ship to you guys over there in Europe. So currently you can't order anything from us in our store. So if you would be interested in something like that and actually putting, you know, your money where your mouth is and rocking some TJ gear overseas, which, by the way, you'd be like one of maybe three people rocking TJ gear overseas. If you are interested in doing that, shoot us an email and just let us know. Just say like, hey, I would rock some stuff. I'm over here. The email address is info@tourjunkies.net, not .com. We're a small shop. info@tourjunkies.net. I'd be interested to see that number. And we'll probably send a box over up to Ash and see if we can spread the love throughout Europe. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm good. Hey, you know, I'm the shipper of the Tour Junkies. Jeez. So, you know, if we can just
everybody move. Feel sorry for Pat.
No, I think that'd be great. By the way, we had some tweets with some overseas apparel wearers this past week. Yeah. So apparel I don't know. It may not nice. Be. It's yeah. probably more than three. Come on.
Well, I mean, all I know is I've given our buddies at Ryder Cup, I gave some stuff to, those are the only people I knew that had stuff in Europe, because we don't ship to Europe. So if guys are taking pictures of our stuff in Europe, it's because we sent it somewhere in the U.S. and they went to Europe.
True.
Which is great. True. I'm just saying, like, I don't, it's still less than like 10. So,
all I can say is the one time I shipped something to Europe that was TJ apparel. It was to Danny Willett's
that's right.
brother,
Willett's,
PJ.
Yes.
And he never got it. So something screwed up over there, because that was the one time I did it.
Now, and I shipped a cup to Beef after he came on the show last year. And that took forever. And actually, it got sent back. But it took so long to get back to me that I had already created another one and sent him a copy. And he got that one in hand, and then a few weeks later, I get the original. So, yeah.
One more reason why we need to just ship a bunch of stuff, and hopefully Ash gets it, and then and then he can take care of it from there, because obviously we're not very good at shipping overseas.
No. I think that's it for announcements. We had a good show last week. If you guys didn't check that out, good cash game strategy show with some DFS terminology basics, a little bit of history and tribal knowledge as to what Golby is, our squirrel mascot. Actually, it's been a pretty popular show. I looked at the numbers the other day. A lot of people listening to it, despite obviously not having DFS that week. So a lot of you guys interested in that. And the cash strategy that Roger Casey threw out was good stuff. And then the terminology basics as well. So and had a lot of people tweet us, man, I'm so glad you guys did that. That was helpful. I needed that, blah, blah, blah. So if you haven't gone back and listened to that, definitely go back and check that out, last week's episode. And this week's going to be interesting, Pat. We've got a new course at Eagle Point. You know, by the way, does anybody know what's going on with FanDuel? Do you know what's going on with FanDuel? I see no pricing out for FanDuel. Have you looked?
I have not looked, but to be honest, I don't really care.
Oh, it just came out. Like, literally just came out.
So we'll talk about that in the shot in the arm, maybe.
That'll be in the shot in the arm.
Yeah.
So we're firing back up the shot in the arm this week on rotogrinders.com. If you go to rotogrinders.com, click in the daily marketplace. You will find the Tour Junkies shot in the arm product. It's only $5.99 for the week. We give you an extensive write-up. We give you fantasy draft plays, FanDuel plays, DraftKings plays, a couple fades that we want to do, some GPP plays, and then the most valuable feature is easily the chat room, which we hop in throughout the week, and especially on Wednesday nights. I'm ready to get back in the chat room. We miss our boys there in the chat room that we get to talk to every Wednesday night. So check that out. We'll do some FanDuel stuff at that point, but honestly, FanDuel got their prices out at like 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the on Monday, so too late. So we'll cover DraftKings. I will say fantasy draft this week We're getting another DFS format, Pat, but I think this format is going to be better received than FanDuel. So before we get into the course breakdown, Fantasy Draft's new format for golf is you draft seven players, not six. You draft seven players, and you keep your best six scores at the end of the week. So obviously, if all seven make the cut, then you take the highest six out of seven. If only six make the cut, that's what you take. And if only five make the cut, you're likely screwed. So it doesn't matter. But it kind of gives you a little extra. You know, you don't get somebody through the weekend, you're not done. There were a couple of websites in the early days of DFS that did this format, and I think a lot of people liked it. I think this will be a better received format easily than FanDuel, that's for sure. So check that out over there on Fantasy Draft. It'd be good stuff. So if you need to sign up for Fantasy Draft and you have not already, shoot us an email, info@tourjunkies.net. info@tourjunkies.net. Tell us you want to sign up for the Fantasy Draft website. It's good stuff. More accurate pricing. They treat their players nice. Low rake. It's good stuff. All right, you ready to get into this?
I am.
All right, give us a course breakdown. We know Paul Desori gave us a lot of info, but you know, Paul can't match Pat. He's just amazing.
Well, he surely can match me, and he's way better. And by the way, I will say this: if you have not, if you kind of skipped over Paul Tesori, you need to go back and listen to him, because if you are wanting any kind of true insight into this course, his is obviously much better than mine because of the experience.
Rule number one: never skip over Paul Tesori in one of our podcasts. Don't ever do that. That is a dumb thing to do.
If we have players on, skip over them if you want to. But
yeah. You don't skip over Paul.
No, because he's obviously going to give us some good information. So, yeah, this week we're at the Wells Fargo Championship in Wilmington, North Carolina, on the coast of North Carolina this week. And usually we are at Quail Hollow Golf Club, but because it's at the PGA Championship, or because Quail Hollow is going to be the site of the PGA Championship, they have gone to a different course this week, and that is Eagle Point Golf Club, playing at just over 7,400 yards, par 72. It's, you know, a traditional par 72, four par fives, four par threes. You got bent grass greens here. They're very undulating. This course is being compared to the Augusta National. Now, again, I'm obviously biased being from Augusta, as I'm sure you are, David, but I don't think it's quite the Augusta National. But this course is going to be beautiful to look at. It's an immaculate condition. You got Bermuda grass from tee to green. It's, you know, this course is like right now it's ranked 100 on the Golf Digest top 100 list. So it barely just fit in there, but it actually has been higher than that in years past. Mm-hmm. But if you listen to, you know, Paul, just some quick takeaways from what he said, you know, ball striking is obviously going to be important here. He does actually think that course history at Quail Hollow will play well into this event, which was a little bit surprising to me because I didn't exactly think he would say that. But again, it's just going to be in pristine condition. Weather this week is, you know, we talked about this with our interview with Paul. It's going to be interesting. I really think you just got to check it on Wednesday, because right now Tuesday looks like about 40% chance of rain. Thursday now looks okay. Friday is about 80% chance of wind or of rain. But if you talk about what Paul talked about, it, I think the rain will play a huge factor in how this tournament plays out as far as the course is concerned. Winds are going to be extremely, I think, you know, you're looking at 15 to 20 mile per hour winds almost every single day. So that is, you're going to look at some wind players. I know Paul mentioned Kiz as being one of the guys that he would look at as far as wind players. But again, I like having a new course. I don't know what your thoughts are on new course, David, but to me, I think this is kind of cool. I think it's kind of fun. It's a little bit different.
Surprised you do, because you're such a course history guy.
I do like this. I think it's fun. It kind of, to me, I feel like it brings, you know, a little more. I don't know. It's just like brings more people into it. So I'm digging it. I'm digging the new course. So what do you think?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. It definitely, from pictures online and some of the chatter that the players are giving, it looks like a beautiful golf course. You know, listen, it's possible to be as pristine of playing condition as Augusta National. I mean, Sage Valley, which we played a few weeks ago with Will Wilcox, is, to me, is in just as great a condition as Augusta National. I mean, there's no... you can have grass as perfect and bunkers as perfect and all that as perfect. So, I mean, I'm sure Eagle Point's going to be on point. So I'm looking forward to it.
On did you point. Say, I like that.
Yeah. Did you say Bermuda or bent grass greens?
The greens are bent grass, but the course from tee to green are Bermuda, but it's overseeded. So.
Gotcha. I thought, you know, what Paul said was great. I mean, it's clearly a ball striker's course, you know, when you look at statistics and things like that. I mean, I'm not really taking into account, putting stats or anything like that. I'm looking at strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained approach. I'm probably going to look at proximity, and I'm probably going to look at scrambling. That's it for me. Form. And as we dig in throughout the week, we'll be looking at correlated courses like Augusta National. Paul also mentioned Quail Hollow, like you said, and then Riviera. So we can dig into that a little bit more throughout the week, and you'll find that on Shot in the Arm as well. But and weather, I do think, will be interesting, as you mentioned. I mean, the wind looks to be a factor, as this course only 1 mile from the ocean. So you know what we'll do is we'll probably get to talk to Paul on Wednesday before the event, and maybe we can get some more insight from him and share it on the Shot in the Arm as well. Usually he's pretty good about that right before they tee off, and kind of giving us any last minute thoughts or tee time waves he likes or whatever. So maybe we can try that. I thought it was interesting what he mentioned about the rough, that the rough just wasn't that hard for him to hit out of the fairway. So I think bombers could definitely be at an advantage, as he mentioned. But also, you know, even Webb, he said, I thought was interesting when he said Webb is going to have wedges into nine of these greens, which is pretty, that's pretty strong. I mean, Webb's not a bomber. So it's good stuff. I'm ready to break it down. You ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, so if we get into the top tier, you know, I think we got to talk about this. Dustin Johnson coming back after the back injury at Augusta the night before he tees off. He got him at 13,000, which is about as high as I think we've seen in a while on DraftKings. Then below him, you've got mini DJ, which is John Rahm, a full $2,000 savings. Phil at 10-2 and Adam Scott at 10,000. Those are the four guys in the five-digit range. What are you gonna do, Pat? What are you thinking?
Well, I think, you know, DJ for me has, you know, when the pricing came out, I was immediately like, I just don't think I can take him there at 13. I mean, you're looking at coming off an injury. He hasn't played in a few weeks. It's just, to me, that's too pricey. And I also think that the value is good down, especially I see a lot of guys in the 6,000 range, 7,000 range, and I just don't really, I don't know, I don't like going with DJ this week. So I'm going to start with Rahm. I think Rahm is obviously, you know, at 11,000, that's more attractive to me. You know, his recent form has been good. He checks a box on straight strokes gained off the tee, where he is number three on tour. So I think I'm going to fade DJ, and I'm going to go straight to Rahm. And then also of this group, there's a part of me that wants to take Mickelson, but I think I'm going to fade him, and I'm going to go with Adam Scott. I love that price at 10,000 for him. Checks a box, strokes gained tee to green, also ball striking, which, you know, we talk about is obviously a big stat this week. So those are my two favorites. It's going to be Rahm and Adam Scott for me this week.
Well, let me give you my personal opinion of DJ is I think he's fine. I don't buy that he's all that injured. I mean, I think he may have been too hurt to play the Masters, yes. I think it's interesting we've not seen or heard of an MRI or some kind of scan or, you know, I mean, normally in any other sport, you find out, you know, somebody goes down and they're a huge athlete, you know, you hear something like, oh, x-rays were negative for this or that. It's a little interesting, but I just don't think, you know, I mean, I remember even that day, Thursday to start the Masters, he warmed up. He may have been in pain, but he warmed up. 3 or 4 weeks off, I feel like he's fine, or he wouldn't be here. And yeah, I mean, obviously we'll keep tabs throughout the week. I'm sure he's going to do press conferences and handle this question, and he's going to go, yeah. I mean, but I mean, do you want to? I feel fine. I feel good. I mean, I'm here. I'm ready to go. I feel better.
But okay. Do you want to pay $13K for him?
That's the problem. That's the problem when you have Rahm at 11. I mean, I do think DJ. I mean, at the same time, you may pay $13K for him, but here's the thing. To me, DraftKings has yet again mispriced some guys very low, okay? And I do think there are some values down low that you could make up some cost. And if you wake up on Thursday morning and you have DJ at, you know, I don't know, sub 15% ownership, which I think is possible, coming off an injury, being at 13,000, being $2,000 less than John Rahm. I think if you have DJ at less than 15%, I think that's interesting. I mean, I'm just saying, if I'm going to play a number of GPP lineups, then I'm going to do that.
Well, I can agree with you there.
Yeah. I would not roll with him in cash whatsoever. No way.
I definitely think you probably should throw, if you're running out a bunch of GPP lineups, I can't argue with at least throwing a few in with DJ, but definitely not cash. I don't see him being a good cash play this week.
I mean, at the end of the day, like, all four of these guys, I actually don't have a problem with any of them. I really don't. I mean, I think you look at correlated courses like Augusta and Riviera, which Paul mentioned. I mean, Phil plays both of those really well. At 10-2, that's a steal. Adam Scott plays Augusta extremely well. I think he's played Riviera pretty well. I think he's won at Riviera, maybe. So, I mean, there's really, I don't think a full fade is necessary on any of these guys. Now, we'll have to wait and see who gets chatted up the most, or maybe what people are saying about DJ. He could go higher on than I think, but I don't hate any of this group. So, I think we're good. Let's keep going. Who you like in the 9K range? You got a little bit larger $9,000 range this week than we have in weeks past. So from Paul Casey down to Wesley Bryan, who you liking?
Well, Paul Tesori mentioned obviously his man Webb, and I think Webb's a good play. I'm a little bit not sure about that price at 9 cents.
Yeah,
I wish he would have been a little bit cheaper this week. So that concerns me, but Paul Casey to me is my top guy here, and I know he's right at the top at 9,900. But I love him this week. He checks a box for me on strokes gained tee to green, ball striking. He's had a top 10 in his last two starts, so I like Paul Casey. I think both on fantasy draft and DraftKings, I would actually put him above a few of those guys like Scott Mickelson. So I think,
whoa,
yeah, I would. Really?
You're normally not really on the Paul Casey train.
I am this week, though. I think this is a perfect course for him. So Paul Casey is probably my top guy this week. So there you go.
Wow. I did not see that coming. Awesome. Well, I like Paul Casey as well. Definitely think that. I mean, when Paul Tesori mentioned ball striker, that's Paul Casey. He's been a ball striker on tour for a decade. 9,900. I love Paul Casey. You know, I think Webb is interesting. Again, we'll have to wait and see what happens. It could be another one of those scenarios where he is so high priced. I mean, he's not a DJ, so I don't want to have a lot of exposure to him. But at 9,700, I think a lot of people are going to jump off of Webb. But I mean, Paul mentioned like Webb knows this course better than anybody out there, and feels like he's got a great shot to play. So I want to have some of him. Even at 9,700, I'm going to have some exposure to him. I'm not going to fade him. I'd also like Bill Haas in this category. He's another North Carolina boy. If you follow Bill Haas, he's an NC guy. 9,500. He's played this golf course a number of times, in fact. Did miss the cut at the Heritage, which wasn't great, but he's usually pretty steady player. So I like a good bounce back from Haas. That's it for me in the 9K range.
I think, by the way, I'm going to throw this out. I just think that Bud Colley at 9400.
That is crazy.
I don't understand that. I'm fading that. I can't justify playing him with so many better players around him. So
I'm gonna give you a stat right here, a little tease, if you will. There is a player with the same Vegas odds. Okay. Same Vegas odds as of Monday when we record the show to win this golf tournament as Bud Colley. And this player is in the 6,000s. Now, it's a gross misprice for that player, but it's also a misprice for Bud Colley. I mean, without a doubt.
Are you want me to guess?
No, you don't have to guess. No. We'll get to it. Let's tease it.
Okay. Because I would like to guess.
Well, I'll let you guess who it is before I say it. I mean, okay. When we get to the 6K range, you can guess.
All right.
All right. 8K range. We're going to try to move quick since we know we had a long podcast. Who you got in the 8K range? You got Glover there, who Paul mentioned. 8,600. Yeah. That's pricey for Glover.
It is, but I like him. I think he should be. I like him in cash. I like him in GPP. Obviously a ball striker, driving accuracy. He's top 10 in strokes gained tee to green. He checks a box. All the stat categories, he's there. So he's going to be, again, probably a staple of a lot of my lineups this week. And then Paul just sort of confirmed that with what he was saying. I'll tell you what, one of the other guys that I think is one of my favorites at 8,100 is Louis Oosthuizen. I love him this week. Strokes gained tee to green, he checks the box. He checks the box on strokes gained off the tee. Again, I think this is a course where, if you look at it, the National is one of the corollary courses that we talked about as being something to look at. He typically plays well there. He's contended there. I think this could be a great tournament for him here. So I'm going to go with Uzi at 8,100. That's going to be, I think, one of my top plays there. And I got to say Kiz. I mean, he's obviously, his recent form has been incredible. Checks the box on strokes gained tee to green and also driving accuracy at 8,400 to Kiz. I was very shocked to see him at 8,400. He should probably be up in that high eights, low nine range. So there you go.
I mean, definitely I would take Kiz over Colley. I would take Kiz over Wesley Bryan right now. I would take him over Pat Perez, over Cabrera Bello. I'd probably put him in that Webb Simpson, Patrick Reed category. So I'm with you. I like Kiz a lot. Paul mentioned being a ball striker and being able to control your ball flight, being able to control your distances, which that's Kiz. That's also Lucas Glover, total ball striker. Don't mind Glover at all, so I'm in agreement there. I'm going to fade Cam Smith, just coming off the win. Pretty significant price increase from what we've been used to with Cam Smith. Obviously coming off the win, you're going to see that, but it's a $1,200 price increase, and then he was in the 6Ks at the Heritage, which, I mean, that those are the times we were telling you to get all over Cam Smith. I mean, he's a great player, don't get me wrong. I just, first win on tour, $1,200 price increase, could be a good time to get off of him. A couple other guys that you didn't mention that I kind of like is Daniel Berger. Berger at 8,300, I feel like, is a little undervalued on DraftKings, coming off the 27th at the Masters, the 5th at the Shell Houston. Another ball striker, doesn't play too bad either on bent grass greens. He prefers Bermuda, but he plays pretty well on bent grass. Also, the same Vegas odds to win as Haas, Wesley Bryan, and Webb Simpson. A full $9,700. So Webb's $1,400 more expensive, and yet Berger, same odds to win, which I thought was interesting. So it looks like a little Vegas odds differential there. And then another guy with some Vegas odds difference to me is JB Holmes, $8,000, priced same odds to win on Vegas as Patrick Reed at 9,800. JB and Bubba made the cut last week, at least. I mean, I don't think they didn't finish that great at the Zurich, but they made the cut. Not in fantastic form after the Masters and the previous event. His last, really good finish was at the WGC Mexico. But now I'm going to have a little exposure to JB. We'll see what happens. So that's it for me in the 8K range. In the 7K range, you've got a lot of guys here, a lot of interesting names, starting with Soren Kjeldsen. Gonna have any of Soren, or who you liking in the 7K range?
I am actually. I'm surprised you said that first, because I do like Soren Kjeldsen. You know, we talk about, you know, Augusta National as being a corollary course, and he is typically fared well there the last couple of years. So I do like that. He's made his last seven straight cuts with some top tens in there. So I think he is. I like him this week. He's going to be in my lineup. So another guy, there's two others that I want to talk about. One surprised me a few weeks ago, and he's like my new, like, you love Brooks Koepka. This guy's kind of my new man crush, and that is Kevin Tway. It's 7,200. And this guy, like, he bombs it off the tee. He checks a box on strokes gained off the tee, driving distance, obviously. He's 13-7 on fantasy draft, which I think is a very good value for him, and 7,200 on DraftKings. Loving Kevin Tway this week and playing well, two straight top tens. So I think you know, I can't argue with trying to play him here this week. And then also our boy Party Martin Laird, who you said on the podcast with Paul Tesori, which I've never heard that Party Marty.
Party Marty, that's a Pat Mayo nickname. Mayo gave him that nickname.
Well, I love it. So I like him at 7,100 this week. He's 14-7. He's actually $1,000 more on fantasy draft than Kevin Tway is. But I do like Laird this week at strokes. You know, he checks the box on strokes gained tee to green. Again, this is a guy that I think could just play this course really well. So him and Tway and then Kjeldsen are three of my top guys. So I was surprised you let in with Kjeldsen. Obviously, you must like him too.
No, actually, I'm not really. I don't really have a lot of Kjeldsen. I just kind of guessed. I do like Laird. I'm not a fan of Tway either. I'm going to fade Kevin Tway. I don't like the wedge game and the putting that you see from Tway. And I think this is going to be a course where, yeah, bombers are an advantage, but I still don't love his wedge play. I don't like the short game work from Tway, so I'm going to fade him. Maybe a little inflated price, too, with just his recent play, but I'm off of him. I do like Laird. You're right. He's kind of a value on DraftKings. I think he's the 26th listed player on Fantasy Draft and, like, the 36th on DraftKings, so a little bit of a difference there, which is important to look at if you're going to play some of these guys. There's a lot of guys in the 7K that I'm going to have some exposure to. Just to name a few that I'm going to have some exposure to, definitely Laird, like you mentioned. McGirt at 7,900, I'm going to have some exposure to. McGirt's kind of a South Carolina, North Carolina guy as well, and ball striker, you know, 7,900. I'll take the good form coming off the T3 at the Heritage, the 22nd at the Masters. Yeah. Hudson Swafford at 7,700 interests me a little bit. Played okay here at the Zurich. I don't know. I think he's kind of a sneaky play. I won't have a lot of exposure to him, but I like him a little bit. I'm back on the JT Poston train. I kind of faded him for Valero after he'd been playing pretty well. But I'm back on the JT Poston train. If you remember and you listened to his interview with us, he's got a great short game. And again, thinking about Webb Simpson having nine wedges into this golf course means JT Poston's probably going to have 9 or 10 into this golf course as well. And I like that if he's wedging it good and he's putting well, which he does. And I think scrambling is important, too, on this event. A lot of these greens slope back to front. There's a lot of false fronts. Guys are going to miss the green. It's going to be tight. Paul even mentioned how tight some of the lies were around there. So getting up and down is going to be important. I like JT Poston at 7,700. Our boy Scott Brown, I like at 76. I like Grillo at 75. I like a lot of guys in the sevens. I like ZJ. Paul mentioned Zach Johnson. I'll jump on him if Paul mentions him. It's a pretty low price for a guy like Zach Johnson. I mean, I know his form is pretty terrible, but, you know, I don't know. This could be a decent event for him to come back again if it turns into a wedge competition. So if the course doesn't get just buckets of rain, I might keep, you know, a little bit of exposure to Zach. Other than that, I think that's probably it. I know I named a lot of guys. I'm just going to have some exposure to those. I would say my favorite out of those categories would be Martin Laird, McGirt, Poston.
I'm with you on McGirt. I do like McGirt. I think McGirt's a great play this week. So,
all right, well, let's wrap it up. I think there's a fair amount of value here in the 6K range on DraftKings. It seems like, you know, this is where I say I think there's some guys that you could work into a lineup to get DJ in. But I'll let you kick it off. Give us all the guys in the 6K range that you like, and we'll button this thing up.
All right, so I'm gonna throw out three guys. One, I definitely think Harold Varner III.
Yep.
At 6,300.
Total lock.
To me is just a lock. You know, ball striking.
North Carolina guy.
You know, East Carolina University. You know, and I just think that 6,300 is just way too cheap for him. And he's a scorer. He's going to make some birdies, and he'll probably screw up a few holes and make some doubles. But I love HV3 this week, so that's one of those that I would be, you know, just got to lock into your lineups. Another one that I think maybe you know, you're talking about the odds on Bud Colley.
Mm-hmm.
Could it have been Shane Lowry at 6,900 on DraftKings?
No. Actually, Lowry's odds a little longer, so not as good as
him. Okay, well, I love Shane Lowry this week at 6,900. I think he's 14,000 on Fantasy Draft, 6,900 on DraftKings. I think, again, just he is a great play this week. Checks the box on strokes gained off the tee, also ball striking. So, again, just another world-class player that's way too cheap this week. And the final guy that I'll throw out, and I know that I never mentioned this guy, but he did come up with our interview with Paul Tesori, and that's Carl Pettersson, or Peterson, or however you want to say it.
You at 6,200. On
course record. He's just so cheap, 6,200. Obviously, is a member here, has the course record on this course. So why not play him? I mean, why not just throw a shot at him? I mean, yeah, sure. Again, he may not be on the top of your radar, but he did have a decent tournament a couple weeks ago in Texas, as Paul mentioned. So why not throw him in some lineups? So there you go.
He's $4,600 on FanDuel, which could be a great rounds one and two play, by the way.
Definitely agree.
So this is going to be interesting. This could bear really poorly for our podcast performance, because you named a bunch of guys in the 6Ks that I don't have circled. Now I did have HV3 circled. I like HV3.
Just but go ahead and say you're going to put Jonas Blix in this category. Let's just go ahead and put Blix in at 6,500.
No. I have a lot more, so which means a lot of our picks are going to be sub-7K picks, and they're more likely to miss a cut. So, you know, maybe it's one of those weeks where we're trying to give you a lot of scrub values, and hopefully a lot of them hit. I mean, I think right off the bat, I'm still a sucker for Luke List. He's missed the last two cuts. He's at $6,900. Seems like it could be a bounce back for List. He's actually the 45th player on DraftKings, but the 28th player on Fantasy Drafts. So a little bit of value there on DraftKings. If you want to pivot off of Luke List and you want to take a guy who's probably going to go lower owned, under the radar, and in way better form, Brian Gay. Back-to-back sixth-place finishes, one at the Valero and one at the RBC. Brian Gay's just making cuts, so it's interesting.
Yes, I agree with you there. He's a good pick.
Matt Jones at 6,800, who we were on for the Valero and was a scrub at 6,300, I believe, for the Valero. Finished with a tie 13th. You know, he's cheap again. I mean, he scores. We've seen him top 10, top 15, $6,800. You know, I'll take it. Jason Kokrak, 6,700. Another Carolina guy with some ties to, I believe he's a Carolina guy, with some ties to the area. Kokrak, another pretty good value on DraftKings as opposed to Fantasy Draft. He's like the 65th player on DraftKings and the 49th player on Fantasy Draft. The player that I was referring to that has the same odds as Bud Colley to win is actually Alex Noren at $6,600.
Yeah.
Noren with the same odds to win as Bud Cauley, who is $9,400, almost $3,000 difference. Now, I'm not a big Noren believer.
See, I don't know if I like Noren this week.
I'm not saying I do either, other than it's really hard to ignore those odds. That's all I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
it's going to be hard if you roll in some GPP lineups not to sprinkle in some Noren lineups. He's the, like, I think he's still the top I think he's the 12th ranked golfer on the planet, which I think I mentioned this for Masters. I was fading Noren because I just don't really buy into that ranking. I think a lot of that has to do with something he did a year ago, and he's really not been in that great of form lately. But we know that he's a, you know, he's been a, on a streak where he's really done well. Like I said, I don't know how much I'll have of him, but I couldn't, when I saw the odds differential, it's pretty hard to ignore almost $3,000 difference in odds. You know, even though, again, I think Bud Cauley is overvalued, but anyway, I got more, man. I got a ton of guys in the 6K range. I think there's a lot of value down here. I think Nick Watney at 6,600. You know, I'm a sucker for Watney, which, by the way, I picked him and Charlie Hoffman as one of my teams on the XM show, which paid off. They played very nicely together. In fact, he's another kind of odds oddity. He's at $6,600 on DraftKings. Same odds to win as your boy, Soren Kjeldsen, at 7,900. A full $1,300 in DraftKings savings. Same odds to win. So I thought that was interesting.
I do like Watney. Well. He is he's on my list this week, so I'm with you there. Also, Johnson Wagner. We're in the W's here, so
well, it's, you know, not obviously out of order, Pat.
Well, you know, Tesori mentioned him, so
we're in the W's. Richie Wierenski. No.
Nah.
So, I have more. Like, I'm just telling you, there's guys in the 6K range that are just striking me, and I'm going to have to narrow it down. I'm just telling you guys, these are the ones that hit me. I think Stuart Sink at 64, Tom Hoagie at 63. Hoagie hadn't missed a cut all year. He's, you know, he's making cuts. I think in cash, maybe. I wouldn't go that low in cash. I don't know why I would play Tom Hoagie, actually. Don't play Tom Hoagie. Scratch that. I'm surprised you didn't say Patrick Rogers. You're usually a sucker for Patrick Rogers.
I've wrote him down, but I just couldn't.
I'll stop at Sink. I think Sink is one. I think Sink is one I would play. I'm gonna play in some GPPs for sure. But let's do this. We never do this. I'm gonna build a lineup real quick. I'm gonna build a lineup with DJ.
Oh,
I'm gonna put DJ in it.
Don't forget, we still gotta do our one and done.
Okay, I'm going to put DJ and Paul Casey in there. Got that?
Okay.
I'm going to put DJ, Paul Casey. I'm going to go all the way down now. I'm going to kind of go to the bottom and fill out from there. And then I'm going to go HV3, which I think is just an absolute steal at $6,300. Then I'm going to go... I'm tempted to go Watney. Let me keep scrolling. Yep, I'm going to Watney. 66. And then, just for you, Pat, I'll go with your boy. I don't really like Shane Lowry, but I'll go with Shane Lowry at 69.
There you go.
That leaves me 7,300 left. I go with Party Marty Laird at 7,100. That's not a bad lineup, dude. DJ.
I love that lineup.
DJ, Paul Casey, Martin Laird, Shane Lowry, Nick Watney, and Harold Varner.
I'm entering that into a contest right now.
I mean, is there any guy in there that you could see that you could see it's out of the realm of possibility for them to top 10?
No.
No. Okay, there's two guys in question. Like, I don't know if Martin Laird, I guess like Varner, Watney, and Laird are like the three guys that you would say, can they win? Now, you don't have to have them win, but can they?
I think Laird can win. I don't think Varner can win, but I think Laird can win. I think Watney will not win. I think Casey and obviously DJ could win. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I think that's interesting. You know, it's a great GPP lineup to me. Now I am a little sucker for Watney. So if you just hate Nick Watney, let's take him out because I know a lot of people. 6,800. You could go. Get a little sketch down here. You got Matt Jones, Beef, Brian Harman, Jason Kokrak, Norin. I mean, you want to buy the Norin hype?
Nah.
So anyway, I think that's interesting. I think it just shows you can get a little DJ in your lineup. That's all I'm saying. All right. One and done. I had Brennan Grace last week, who I went ahead and used up, which I probably shouldn't have, but I went ahead and used up Brennan Grace as my one and done, who finished, like, I think top 25, whatever. It wasn't great. Who did you have? I don't remember.
I went with, actually, Louis Oosthuizen. I thought him and Brennan Grace
were partners. Okay.
Yeah, so yeah.
All right, so let me. We're getting deep in the year. I need to figure out who I've actually played. Let me pull this up. I'm so far out of it anyway. Do you know who you're picking already? You can go ahead.
Well, I have not played Paul Casey, and he is obviously one of my top. So I'm going Casey this week. So
there you go. I was just thinking that. And I haven't played him either. That's who I was looking up. You know what? Oh, I've already played him. Dang it. I've already played. Man, I was going to do Casey and then the other guy I've already played. Let me do. I want to do Casey, but I don't want to do the same. Have we done the same before?
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't taken them, you can. There's nothing stopping you from doing it. Yeah, doing the same week as me.
No, I'm gonna hold off because I need something a little more crazy. I need something a little more out of nowhere to kind of move up again. I need to get cute here. I'm gonna go with. I'm going to go with McGirt.
Wow. Okay. I like that.
Pretty weird, huh?
It's weird, but I like it.
I feel weird about that. All right. That's a wrap, boys. Thanks for listening to the Tour Junkies podcast. We appreciate it. Hope you guys enjoyed the Paul Tesori interview, as that was clearly the most valuable part of this podcast. So,
yeah.
Don't forget to do all the stuff we told you to do. And may your screens be green. Best of luck, the Wells Fargo Championship from beautiful Eagle Point, which is on point, as we've already established. See ya!